मां बाला ली Good evening and good afternoon. It's such a delight to be with you, with all of you, for our 7-week Kundalini class. And let's just take a moment, those of you who are here, and just feel the presence of all of us. Part of the gift of these sanghams, these thought sanghas, is the sangham that is created, the experience that is created for all of us in being together here. And in these moments, as we begin the call, as we begin the class especially, there's something very beautiful about simply allowing our attention to stretch out, to move out and actually encompass all of us. For many years, my life has been irradiated with the presence of the awakened inner Shakti, Kundalini. Her unfolding over the course of about 45 years of practice has led me to my great teachers, to many different kinds of practice and study, but above all, to the profound undercover work that has reordered my priorities, my understanding of human life, and has given me a deeper and deeper recognition of what it is that I really am, both on the human level, on the personal level, and on the transpersonal level. So for me to give this class and to share with you what I've come to know about Kundalini is, for me, a profound privilege and a gift of her love. And I very much hope an opportunity for all of you to experience her love. We have 7 weeks together, and that means that we have time to explore Kundalini Shakti and our own relationship to Kundalini Shakti from many perspectives. We can look at her esoteric aspects, at the mystical lore about Kundalini. We can dispel some and hopefully all of the myths about her, both the cultural myths and even some of the yogic myths. And also to look deeply, and I believe this is the most important part of it, into the unique workings of Kundalini Shakti in you, in me, in all of us. And in the course of this, we're going to try and answer all the questions that come up for us, some of them in the course of the class. Some of these questions will be answered on the listserv. And really, it's my intention that each of us is able to get deeply in touch with our own personal experience of Kundalini acting within us, and that we become the witness, the trusting witness, even the devoted witness to her divine intention to open you and I to the truth of our own soul, our own individual soul, and also to the truth of the great soul of which we're all a part. So tonight, I want to begin to define Kundalini in both the macro and micro levels, to begin to speak about the nature of awakening, which we'll explore more deeply in our next class, and of course, to meditate with some of the powerful practices that help us become more present to her actual unfolding in our being and her power in our lives. So I want to begin by just making us all aware of the housekeeping details of these teleconferences. Some of you, those of you who've been practicing with us in this form, know a lot about them, but nonetheless, it's good to rehearse them. Deb, who administrates the courses, has sent you an information sheet with the details, of course, about the call-in numbers, about the listserv, about how to get on the course website, which is very important, the protocol for sending in questions. And if you have any technical questions, whether about your participation in the course or anything to do with the listserv or the way information is going out, you can contact Deb directly. Her email address is actually on that information sheet. Audio downloads of every class will be available the day after the course, that is tomorrow, and the written homework assignment, which there will be one of for every class, along with quotes and suggested readings, will be sent out either on the evening after class or in the morning. And there will also be audio meditations periodically that will be available on the website, single audio meditations. And I would say one of the most important pieces I want to share with you right now is the encouragement to make meditation a daily experience. It is one of the most important aspects of this course. And though we will be meditating together, and though the download, the transmission that occurs during the call has its own power, as many of you know, the truth is that the real purpose of practicing together in this way is to begin to more deeply experience Kundalini in the ways that really only happens when we're doing some sort of deliberate interning practice. So all of the transmissions that may occur through the class experience or through your contemplation comes through the class, but it deepens through meditation, through working with the mantras that we'll give, and through working also with the contemplation exercises, which to me are one of the most beautiful parts of spiritual practices. The time we can take to actually hold the truths of Kundalini, the visions of Kundalini, our questions about our life that come up in the course of the practice, to actually hold these questions and visions and mantras in consciousness and allow them to work that particular magic that sacred words can begin to set forth in awareness. So, again, greetings and love. I want to read a beautiful poem by Ram Prasad Sen, who was, as many of you know, one of the most beautiful poets of the goddess tradition in Bengal. These are his words, translated by Lex Hickson. O goddess, your essence alone is present within every life, every event. Your living power flows freely as this universe. You are expressed fully, even by the smallest movement. That means that the sound of my voice, your body moving in the chair or in the seat, the movement of your breath is an expression of goddess. Wherever I go, this is the poet again, wherever I go and wherever I look, I perceive only you, my blissful mother, radiating as pure cosmic play. Earth, water, fire, air, space, and consciousness are simply your projected forms. There is nothing else. O Ma, your lucid dream of light is the theater of birth and death, the expanse of boundless transparency. So this, of course, is an indication to what we could call the macro aspect of Kundalini, what in Kashmir Shaivism is called Samashti, or all-pervading Kundalini, or Shakti Kundalini, Kundalini as the cosmic power of the universe. In this class today, we're going to speak a little bit about macro Kundalini, mainly in order to put our practice in perspective. Because one of the things that I learned from my guru and from the study of non-dual Kashmir Shaivism, which I believe is one of the most not only exalted but practical philosophies for understanding the spiritual process. In this tradition, our experience of working with Kundalini within our own lives is very much aided and irradiated when we understand who she is in the cosmic drama and how our own life process, our own sadhana process, is actually an expression of that cosmic drama. So the goal of Kundalini Shakti's work within us is to open us to the highest and greatest evolution of our own soul. She will do this through whatever means is appropriate to your life at any moment, and her inner work with you will unfold in precisely the way that is appropriate for you, for your inner state, for your karmas, for your personal life situation, and for really the place that is right for you to experience your own further evolution. Kundalini literally means coiled, and it refers to a form of the sacred feminine energy that resides in the subtle body, in the energy body of a human being, and we'll say more about that later on, in a very specific form. Kundalini in this form is said to be coiled in a spiral, like a snake made of light, which is why she's sometimes called the serpent power. Inside the root chakra at the base of the spine. And at the same time, and this is very important, and it's one of those subtle truths about Kundalini that we hear again and again, and then at a certain point we get it. At least that's how it's always been for me. So Kundalini actually pervades the human body, because she is literally the life force intelligence in the body. She's that power that manifests as the energy within our cells, that shows a liver cell how to become a liver cell and not a heart cell. She's the energy that powers the heartbeat, makes the blood flow, draws the breath in and out, acts through the DNA, because in my view, and in the view of many of those who contemporary thinkers and practitioners who study Kundalini, Kundalini is not only the power behind DNA, she's also the subtlest form of DNA. And in ordinary life, and this is, again, something that is very important to remember if we are to understand the practice of working with Kundalini. In ordinary life, the force of Kundalini actually works to keep us asleep to the truth about ourselves. In other words, there's a face of Kundalini that whose purpose is to tie us to the illusion of separation from the all. And this occurs because in the natural process of manifesting this world, the primordial power known as Shakti actually creates an experience of separation from her wholeness, conceals her presence in the world. That this is a paradox that all the mystical traditions have shown us. She conceals her own power and freedom, which is our power and freedom, and gives herself the illusion of being confined to a body and defined by a particular personal history. And once that veiling has occurred, no matter how much we read and understand non-duality or oneness or the teachings of Buddhism or mystical Christianity, this fundamental sense of separation is going to prevail. Even when we have glimpses or tastes of reality, that fundamental contraction comes back sooner or later. And as many of us experience, you know, after perhaps a very open meditation, we notice that little by little we're back in the primary experience of being limited. And yet at the same time, they've always been sages, deeply experienced practitioners who recognize through experience that it is actually possible to live in the world and function in a body without that fundamental egoic contraction that is, as Buddha so famously said, the source of suffering. Thus, spiritual practice. And, of course, every practice from mindfulness to mantra to inquiry to hatha yoga to prayer, every spiritual practice is designed to cultivate the readiness to wake up to our oneness, if not to, you know, with a little bit of grace, to catapult us into an experience of our oneness. But actually, it was the sages of the tantric tradition who really wrote openly about the fact that the secret of waking up involves a profound inner partnership with your own divine energy, with Kundalini, and also involves a, let's call it, decision, a kind of cosmic decision on the part of the Kundalini Shakti to wake up within an individual. So in other words, and this is a significant part of the way we're going to practice with Kundalini Shakti, the awakening of the power of transformation within us is not something we make happen. It's something that the cosmic Shakti does within us through what many traditions call the power of grace. And the reason for this is that because she herself has made the decision to, let's say, give us the experience of contraction and limitation, she herself ultimately makes the decision to wake us up to reality. So what we experience as the awakening of Kundalini is not, it's not the, so much the result of the practices we do, although these practices are very helpful in the process, but they are actually the awakening of her liberating face. She's the one who presses the reset button that allows us to know ourselves as we truly are. So when the goddess Kundalini, and we're going to refer to her throughout this course as Goddess Kundalini, because truthfully that is what she is. You know, there's one of the misunderstandings about Kundalini in contemporary life is that Kundalini is a biological force. She is a biological force, but she's much more than that. She is actually the cosmic power of freedom, that power which alone can give us the ability to know ourselves as we truly are. And how that happens and what the many experiences along the way feel like, look like, are experienced as is the subject of this class. So let's, as we segue into the meditations and the explanations that are part of the process here, let me just say a couple of things, and then we're going to chant. First of all, our relationship with Kundalini is long-term. It's not like we're going to date her for a few months and then go on to something else. This is a marriage. This is a lifetime relationship. And what that means is that we can, in a certain sense, relax and trust that the relationship will unfold. And in fact, the more we can practice and trust in that unfolding, the more we can trust that our own soul is actually unfolding. And in the process of unfolding, we should also recognize that Kundalini's awakening and unfolding touches every dimension of our being, physical, subtle, mental, emotional, and very much the causal, deepest level of being, where we don't even know what's happening because she's working in such an underground level until we see the results. We also should know that there's not a one-size-fits-all playbook for Kundalini's unfolding, simply because each of us is unique in our karmic unfolding, our karmic structure. And at the same time, there are very definitely laws at play. You know, the divine world, the divine structure of this universe has order. It has, in Sanskrit, the word is krama. It's both akrama, which means spontaneous and filled with surprise and newness. It's also krama, which means orderly. And part of the order of Kundalini's working and unfolding is to have the appropriate understanding about what's happening and also to understand which of the gold standard Kundalini practices are appropriate at different stages. So one of the great practices that allows us to deepen our intimacy with Kundalini is the practice of mantra and invocation. In the yogic texts, there's a mysterious statement, a sutra, that says Kundalini is of the form of mantra. And if you understand about the texts of the Yoga Tantra, you know that mantra in Tantra is considered to be an absolutely primal form of transformative power. And the transformative capacity of mantra actually comes from the fact that the sacred sounds of certain mantras actually work with Kundalini to literally transform the particles of our consciousness. So, and the mantras that we'll chant in this class actually will help to activate her and also to, let's say, soothe her when she feels intense, to activate her more intensely when she feels dull, and also really to help us communicate more deeply with the energy of Shakti inside ourselves. So we'll start with a traditional Vedic chant. It's often sung at the beginning of a class, of a teaching, of a spiritual gathering. And this mantra asks that all of us, the students, the teacher, and the wisdom that's being shared, be protected. So the first line of the mantra means, may we be protected together, and that means all of us. May we enjoy the fruits of our practice together. So we are asking that the wisdom, the knowledge, the practice that we do actually bear fruit for us, and that our individual practice be enhanced by our joining. And that these practices also be of benefit to all beings, because when we say, may we be protected together, we don't just mean those of us in the class. We really mean everyone, all beings. The third verse, the third line says, may we achieve strength. By strength, we mean the capacity to live our lives with really full attention to our highest priorities. May we have the strength to go through whatever we need to go through in the course of our lives, in the course of our karmic journey, with a real sense of being connected to our own source, which is the source of true strength. The next line says, may our knowledge shine brightly. It literally says, may our knowledge become light. And finally, may we be well disposed towards one another, unclouded by negativity. So we're asking that we really understand the positive intention that each one of us has to use our connections with one another, to the wisdom being shared here, for the highest purpose, for the most positive end, not to use it for anything other than the next stages of enlightenment on our journey. So these verses really call upon the attitude that is very helpful in giving and receiving sacred teachings. And these are verses that sages of many traditions have customarily sung at the beginning of classes or practice sessions. So the first line is Om Saha Navatu, Om Saha Navavatu. Second line is Saha Nau Bhunaktu. Third line is Saha Viryam Karavavahe. Fourth line, Tejasvi Navaditamastu. Ma Vidvishavahe. Om Shanti, 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 peace, peace, peace. And these mantras are on the sheet that Deb sent you and also in the private area of the website. And we're going to sing them. I will sing the first line and you can sing to yourself. Om Sahana Bhavatu. Sahana Bhunaktu. Saha Viryam Karavavahe. Tejasvinavadiktamastuma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. You can inhale with the thought, may there be peace, and exhale, letting go of any remnants of your day, any residue of your day, allowing yourself to settle deeply into your sitting posture, into the feeling of the earth supporting you, into the breath flowing in and flowing out. I'm going to give you a very specific breathing pattern, which is not the breathing pattern that we often work with in our classes. And I'd like to ask you to engage in it very naturally, not as a form of pranayama, not as a way of forcibly or even deliberately directing the breath, but simply as a way of letting the breath flow. Since so many of the practices that relate to Kundalini really connect consciousness to breath. With the inhalation, sense the breath flowing up through the center of the body, through the crown of the head, touching the region perhaps 8 to 10 finger widths above your crown. And then with the exhalation, feel the breath flowing down through the center of the body, down through the base, and from the base of your body down into the earth. Inhale with the sense that the breath flows up the body, up through the center of the body, up towards the crown, through the crown of the head, touching into the space above the crown, which is known as the Sahasrara, the thousand-petaled lotus. And then with the exhalation, feeling the breath flow down from that space through the center of the body, down through the base of the body, and into the earth. And just allow yourself to settle into that pattern, inhaling up towards the crown, exhaling down towards the base in a very gentle and relaxed way. Actually uniting earth and heaven through the breath. And we'll go more deeply into that practice as we go. And as you allow the breath to flow in this way, not in any way trying to force it, just letting your awareness ride the breath, let me just say a few words about the underlying teaching behind the tradition of Kundalini Shakti and the Tantras. And I know that this is something that we have discussed before. It's definitely the underpinning of my particular approach to practice. But there is something about returning to this awareness at the beginning of a class like this that reminds us in a new way, because this awareness always needs to be approached in a new way, of what's really going on here. So we've said already that Kundalini is the personal or microcosmic form of the great power of the universe, Shakti, the divine feminine creative force. And in the tradition of Kashmir Shaivism, Tantra, of yoga indeed, it's understood that the ultimate reality, the divine reality, the ultimate reality, Brahman, the vastness, the Tao, God, the pure consciousness, the absolute, there's so many names for it, the Ayin, is non-dual. It's one. And yet, according to Tantra, it has two inseparable aspects. One is pure awareness, pure transcendent light, pure being. And as light, as awareness, as being, it is the invisible ground of all that is. And by light, of course, we don't mean the light we can see with our eyes, but the light that actually comes from the center of everything, that has no source outside itself, the self-luminous light. So within this great light resides the force, the energy, the creative power that ceaselessly brings forth the worlds of becoming, that is, in fact, the intrinsic power to become, to create, to act, to do, the creative force of pure consciousness. And these two aspects of reality are sometimes described as Chit Ananda, awareness and blissfulness. And inside the Ananda, the blissfulness of awareness, is its power, its creative dynamism. And in tantric traditions, again, as so many of you know, they're personified as a divine couple, completely one. They sit together on the same ground, as one great poet says, wearing the same garment of light. They're not different, and yet they dance together, you know, in the great paradox of reality, that is, there is only one, and yet there is relationship. And the transcendent masculine, the awareness, is called Shiva. The transcendent feminine, the love power dynamic aspect, is called Shakti. This understanding that Shakti, the divine feminine, and of course we're talking about masculine and feminine beyond gender, they're at the transcendent level. But the understanding here is that the source of all power, of all becoming, is the divine feminine. In fact, the source of power in the gendered masculine is an aspect of Shakti, the divine feminine. So Shakti at this level is the absolute power and creativity of the absolute. We personify them as masculine and feminine form is really because giving them form gives us a hook, a connection, a way to concentrate our mind. But in fact, they're way beyond form. And the core insight of all the non-dual traditions, as I know you know, is that when we are free of our conditioning, we discover that our natural state as a human consciousness is pure awareness and love, pure awareness and presence. For many of us, this is an experience that we touch into regularly in meditation or in yoga or when we are walking in nature. And there, the core truth that we discover through our practice is that the ground, the primordial presence and awareness that is our deepest self is both still, is both a witness, unmoved, the unmoved mover, as they say, and an infinitely creative power to become, to know, to desire, to act. The unmoved part is the witness, the mover is the Shakti. And in the tantric traditions, it's said that every activity and thought and movement in this world and in ourselves is an expression of that primordial energy, the love energy we call Shakti. And that every experience we have, from the way in which our muscles engage, to the way the breath flows in and out of our bodies, to the growth of the embryo, to the division of cells, to the wind, to the growth, decay, and reformation of everything in the physical world and in the subtle world. Everything is an expression of Shakti. Whereas the Shiva aspect, the awareness aspect, is the ground behind and within all this. So in the tantric tradition, there's also an understanding that in our normal garden variety human experience, that pure Shiva beingness ground is experienced as our awareness, as that, as one contemporary teacher says, that garden variety awareness which allows us to know that we're experiencing everything. That awareness is our human experience of Shiva, and the breath is the most apparent way in which we can get in touch with Shakti, with that transformative power. So when you join your awareness to the breath, you're in fact consciously and deliberately entering the dance of Shiva and Shakti, of the primordial awareness and the primordial bliss energy. So, again, as we continue in this time together, let your awareness flow with the breath. Join your awareness with the breath. And we'll enter into what I call an embodied recognition of Kundalini Shakti, of Shakti manifesting as our body-mind. I call this whole-body meditation. It's something you can do on the bus. And it actually begins to give us a conscious awareness of the fact, the way in which Shakti, Kundalini, is manifesting in our ordinary life experience. So, just for a moment, bring your awareness to the flow of breath in your nostrils. Let yourself feel the prana moving in and out, cool on the inhalation, warm on the exhalation. Notice which parts of the body move with the breath. Perhaps your chest or your abdomen, even your shoulders. You're not trying to make the breath flow in any certain way. You're just noticing what parts of your body naturally move. See if you can also be aware of the sensations in your muscles, the ways in which your muscles fire to hold you in place, and of the actual experience of energy expressing itself through your muscles as energy expresses itself through the breath. Now let the inhalation flow upward through the crown. With the inhalation, and then let the exhalation flow down through the body, and bring your awareness to the region at the root chakra, to the perineum, that little knob of flesh between the anus and the sexual organ. And see if you can let your attention, your awareness flow down below the perineum to a region about 8 inches, 8 finger widths below the perineum, just as we're letting the breath flow into the Sahasrara, the region above the crown. We also can begin to be awake, aware, to the region of the Muladhara, the root chakra, which is not only at the root of the body, but is actually below the body. So we're entering into these subtle energy centers. The inhalation brings our attention up to the crown, the exhalation down below the body to the root. and have the thought that in the root chakra, a coiled spring of light, coiled in a spiral 3.5 times, circles the pillar-shaped white light form called the Shivalingam. So see if you can become aware of the presence in your root chakra about 8 finger widths below your perineum, below the base of your body, of this coiled spring of golden light embracing the pillar-shaped form of Shiva. Just see if you can have the awareness of this presence, whether you visualize it or not. And we're going to chant one more mantra, which is also on your sheet. This is the mantra, the Kundalini Dhyanam mantra. It's a meditation on coiled Kundalini. The translation goes, let us contemplate the upward flowing goddess Kundalini wrapped around the self-luminous lingam. At the root chakra, who is nectarian, who is subtle, who embodies creation, sustenance, and dissolution. Who is the source, who creates, sustains, and absorbs the universe into herself, who transcends the universe, and who is wisdom itself. Dhyayat kundalinim devim swayambhu lingavishtinim shyamam sukshmam shristirupam shrististitilayatmikam vishvatitam yanarupam Chintayet urva vahinim, dhyayet kundalinim devim, swayambulinga vishtinim. With these words, we invoke that form of Shakti who coils at rest at the base of the spine, whom we call goddess, whom we call she. Because she is not only the evolutionary energy of your soul, she's not only in the internal force that evolves your consciousness, but she is your personal form of the Divine Mother. My guru, Swami Muktananda, who is a great master of Kundalini, was once asked why it is that in his field, in his world, Kundalini Shakti awakened and unfolded for people so smoothly and with so much love. And he said, it's because we love her. It's because we recognize her as goddess. It's because we think we don't understand, we don't think of her as a biological force or as an alien force. We know her as the divine intelligence of our own being, of our own body. And he said that understanding, that attitude about Kundalini Shakti is the most important understanding we can have about Kundalini. So I want to unfold that understanding a little bit to talk a little bit about what the texts say about Kundalini and say a little bit about how she awakens, and we'll go once again into a series of meditations. One of the great texts of the Hatha Yoga tradition says, without the grace of Kundalini, liberation is impossible. In fact, in the Hatha Yoga traditions, as many of you know, one of the purposes of Hatha Yoga is to help awaken Kundalini. But Kundalini is also described in Taoism in a wonderful book called The Secret of the Golden Flower. She's very much the secret of Taoist yoga. She's described in Tibetan Buddhism as Kundalini, very similarly to the way she's talked about in the Indian Hindu tantras. In mystical Christianity, where she's Kundalini is not understood as a force that we can experience in the body, but she is understood as the mystical force of awakening. Some of you who've studied mystical Christianity might remember the wonderful statue by Bernini of Saint Teresa of Avila, who was one of the great mystical saints of the Spanish movement of the 16th century. And Saint Teresa had a very famous rapture experience among her many other mystical experiences, in which she experienced herself being pierced by a spear of light that she understood to be the sphere, the entrance of Christ energy into her body. She experienced that light piercing her side and set off an entire radical awakening experience, which she has recorded for us in her autobiography, which is one of the great mystical texts of the world. In the Aboriginal culture of Australia, she's described as the rainbow serpent. In the tradition of the Bushmen, of the Kung Bushmen of Africa, she's described as the Num energy. So the energy of Kundalini, of course, she's called Qi and Shen in China, and the Chinese and the Taoists recognize different levels of Kundalini, just as the tantric practitioners of India do. Kundalini operates at all levels of our beings. She's a, what in the Indian tradition we call a four bodies experience. And again, many of you are aware of the map of the human being as consisting of four bodies. There's another yogic map that talks about the five sheaths, but they actually correspond to the four bodies. And I like the four bodies description simply because it's the one my guru liked. So Tantra tells us that we don't have just one body. We have four layers, four levels of being that exist within us, like the layers of an onion. And again, because so many of you are yogic practitioners, you know how incredibly important it is to understand this about ourselves and to realize that all the issues of our life, all the problems of our life, all the different means of transformation that we engage in have to be understood in terms of their effect on these bodies. So the most obvious body, of course, is the physical body, sometimes called the gross body, which is the body we experience in the waking state. And, of course, the physical body is it's in a certain sense the hardest to influence directly, because it is so very, let's say, gross, so very material. And yet permeating the physical body, literally interpenetrating the physical body and also extending beyond it, is the subtle body, the energy body, which, when the energy body is really healthy, it actually extends all around us, at least to the extent of our outstretched arms. So it is much larger than the physical body. And when we meditate, when we go deep inside in meditation, one of the experiences we often have is a sense of the dissolution of the boundaries of the physical body. And this is a sign that we are actually meditating inside the subtle body. And the subtle body, of course, is the place where we experience dreams. It's a place we enter when we meditate deeply. It's often activated in Hatha Yoga practice. It's the seat of the pranas, the vital forces. And it's also, the subtle body is also the place where the astral worlds, the astral forces of the universe are at play. So that in subtle body meditation, practitioners do often find themselves traveling in subtle realms, in what are sometimes called astral realms, where they're, you know, the body, in the astral realms, our bodies can change and shift and become very light and fly and travel to distant places. So the subtle body is, a much more creative aspect of our being than the physical body, simply because it's lighter, it's freer. Kundalini is activated in the subtle body. You know, it's one of the reasons why nobody can find Kundalini when they dissect the physical body. It's because it's a subtle force. She's a subtle force inside the physical body. Of course, the chakras are also in the subtle body. Beyond the subtle body is what's called the causal body. And it's called causal because it actually contains the deep blueprints of our karmas, of, you know, our deeply seated tendencies, not only our family tendencies, our ancestral tendencies, but also the soul tendencies that we've come into this life with that may be rooted in other lives, and which are often unknown to us because the causal body characteristically is dark. You know, just as the unconscious is said to be dark, the causal body it does not have, in general, a visual analog. And it's the body that we enter in deep sleep and also in very deep states of meditation. It's the level of our unconscious as well as of the collective unconscious. And beyond the causal body is a level of consciousness called the supracausal body, or the fourth body, the fourth state. And the supracausal body is the state we enter which we call awakening or enlightenment, the state where we are able to witness every aspect of our life with the awareness that who and what we are is this transcendent awareness that's beyond all that. Some of us actually enter the supracausal body in meditative states. It's an extraordinary experience to be in the supracausal body, and enlightened beings in the tradition that I was trained in are beings who are actually able to inhabit this awakened body, this awakened awareness, even while acting in the world, moving in dreams and meditation, but always with this awareness that who and what they really are is light. The ultimate effect of awakened Kundalini is actually to give you a deeper and deeper experience of yourself as the supercausal body. Because Kundalini is actually the energy that can actually operate in all these four bodies. And she does. When Kundalini is awakened, she creates transformation in the physical body. She creates subtle transformations, literally changing the way our minds work, changing the tendencies, the conditioning that's lodged in our subtle and causal bodies, and ultimately giving us a deeper and deeper experience of the the awakened body, the fourth body. So Kundalini is a force that manifests for us on every level. And that means that some of the ideas that that are formulated about Kundalini are what I would call myths. So I'd like to give you a kind of Cliff's Notes version for our first class. We're going to go very deeply into this as the class goes on. I want to tell you some of the myths about Kundalini and to give you some of the, you know, kind of basic keys to practicing with Kundalini. The first is that Kundalini's manifestations, this is not a myth, this is the truth, Kundalini's manifestations can occur in many different ways. She can manifest in us with some intensity, rather fiercely, and for some people, especially people who are on what I might call the fast track of awakening, usually because of having done a lot of practice, she often, or the awakening of Kundalini can feel quite intense, but not always. And for many of us, and I include many of you in this class, for many of us, the initial awakening of Kundalini is really quite subtle. In fact, when Kundalini awakens in us, we often don't really realize that there's been an awakening, because we sometimes associate Kundalini awakening with a kind of dramatic uprush of energy along the spine, or very palpable mystical experiences. But in fact, the initial Kundalini awakening very often takes the form of a transformation of our priorities, so that the experience of being really interested in spiritual life is actually an experience of an initial Kundalini awakening. So Kundalini, when Kundalini awakens, the awakening often happens in the course of spiritual practice. And as is often said, Kundalini awakenings can be partial, and they can also be, so to speak, permanent. But in Hatha yoga practice, in meditation practice, when chanting, when we're doing self-inquiry, or when we're in the presence of a teacher who's capable of transmitting awakened experiences, Kundalini will often be activated. She can also be activated during times of crisis, when we're in the middle of a life transformation. I've actually known two people who experienced Kundalini awakenings on the battlefield. One in Vietnam during an actual firefight, the other in Iraq during a similarly intense experience. And in both cases, the experience of the awakening was an experience of the whole field. Which in both cases was pretty intense and horrific, suddenly transforming itself so that instead of looking like a dire, horrible war scene, it suddenly became apparent to each of them that what was happening inside a field of light. That's a very classic intense Kundalini awakening, and in both cases it led to a real transformation of priorities. Kundalini can also be activated during a near-death experience, during sex, or just spontaneously, seemingly out of nowhere. One of my dear friends experienced the awakening of her Kundalini in the supermarket aisle. The experience was of the entire supermarket just transforming itself into a dance of forces and factors that were manifesting as the food on the shelves, as the movement of the people in the aisles. She began to laugh because she saw how playful reality is. And, this was a utterly spontaneous Kundalini awakening. Normally a spontaneous Kundalini awakening is the result of past life practices. In other words, there's often a backlog of practice which allows an awakening to be strong, but sometimes not. And this is one of the reasons why it's so important to have the right information about what is actually happening with the Kundalini awakening. Because when the awakening is strong, a couple of things can happen. First of all, we can be frightened because it's so out of the ordinary. And secondly, we can become inflated, thinking that something is happening that, is a sign that we've been somehow specially chosen. And in fact, in our time, it seems that more and more people are experiencing awakenings. In fact, I think that one of the reasons why yoga and meditation are becoming so widely popular is precisely because the awakening is happening. So Kundalini is not a rare event, at least not anymore. It's not an unusual exotic energy which is unpredictable and out of control. Kundalini is the natural awakening of our capacity for spiritual growth. And it's also true that Kundalini awakening happens in many different strengths. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about my own awakening in a couple of minutes, which, I have, like many of you, experienced successive awakenings, which have come about in different strengths and have had different effects. Some of them have been very, very subtle, some of them more dramatic. One of the misconceptions about Kundalini that I think is actually rather damaging is the idea that Kundalini awakening leads to what some people call spiritual emergency or to strange energetic and mental problems, that there's something pathological about Kundalini awakening, and that when a Kundalini awakening happens and you're experiencing fear or discomfort, it's a sign that there's something wrong and that it needs to be fixed. Normally, when an experience like that is happening, it is actually the result of misinformation or inappropriate diet. And not only is there nothing that needs to be fixed, but an understanding of how to work with and support Kundalini will almost invariably, a large percentage of the time, transform the experience so that it begins to feel growthful and very deeply manageable and satisfying. So I've already said that we often think of Kundalini awakening as the feeling of energy going up the spine or ascending through the central channel, sort of like an elevator going up an elevator shaft. Again, this is not true. Kundalini, when she awakens, can be experienced in different parts of the body, in different centers, and in different ways. And we're going to go very deeply into some of them in the course of this time together. Another misconception is that when we talk about Kundalini, we're talking about a particular brand of Hatha Yoga, what's usually called Kundalini Yoga, which is a style that was created by a very wonderful Indian yogi called Yogi Bhajan, and, you know, which is taught in studios, yoga studios around the country. And again, the Kundalini Yoga tradition as a brand is a very beautiful tradition, but Kundalini Yoga is not what they do in the studios related to Yogi Bhajan. Kundalini Yoga, and this is again something I want to underline for you, Kundalini Yoga is actually the spontaneous process that begins to take place in us once our Kundalini is awakened. And that spontaneous process occurs not only when we're sitting for meditation or practicing asana. It occurs when we're walking, when we're eating. It manifests in our relationships. It manifests in the untying of our karmic knots, in the transformation of our emotional life. In other words, it's an all-encompassing practice, an all-encompassing process. And truly speaking, once Kundalini is awakened, our effort, our work, should be understood as supporting her unfolding. And because it's not a one-size-fits-all process, each of us actually gets to learn about her through experience. And part of what I'm going to do, what I hope to do in this class, is give each of you a particular understanding about what it means to support Kundalini, to follow Kundalini's guidance, to dance with her, to partner with her, rather than trying to manipulate her or control her or harness her. Kundalini is really not to be manipulated or controlled or harnessed. It's more that she is meant to be loved and invoked and related to, literally spoken to, invoked, thought of as a kind of inner lover or inner partner in our evolution. And as we do that, what will often happen is that we find that there's an energy that gets behind whatever spiritual practice you do, whatever study you do, whatever healing you do, whatever character work you engage in, whatever psychodynamic work you engage in. When she's awake, she will enhance it. She'll help you find the insights that are needed. She will actually activate your skill and wisdom in all the areas of your life, so that every activity you do for the sake of growth is made to bear fruit much more easily, much more simply. So let's take a breath in and feel the breath now flowing up through the center of the body, through the crown, resting in the area above the crown, and then flowing down the body with the exhalation down towards the base of the spine. See if you can begin to feel the presence of the Muladhara Chakra, this center below the body. It's about 8 finger widths below the perineum. Here in the Muladhara, the root chakra, which is called in the tantric traditions the kunda. Kunda means bowl, you know, the pelvic bowl. The pelvic bowl, the word kunda refers to the pelvic bowl. It also refers to the bowl which holds fire. And kundalini is very much the energy of subtle fire. And coiled as she is like a snake around the Shiva Lingam in the base, she is very much associated with the earth energy of the sacred snake, which, as many of you know, the snake was one of the signifiers of goddess in the ancient earth traditions. So the congruence between the image of the snake who coils in the earth and comes out, uncoils, comes out and rises to the image of the striking cobra, which in many of the statues of the Buddha and of other enlightened beings, there is the image of a cobra uncoiled. The cobra is raised and the hood of the cobra is poised over the head of the Buddha like a protective canopy. And this, of course, symbolizes the awakened kundalini, the rising kundalini. It's said that when Shakti, the primordial Shakti, has completed her work of manifesting the physical world, she takes root in the center of the earth in the form of a fire. You know, the molten core of the earth is said to be the physical form of the resting Shakti in the cosmos, in the earth world. And inside the human body, which is the microcosm of the cosmos, according to the tantric tradition, she takes rest in the Muladhara Chakra. And it's said that when Shakti has descended to become a physical human body, she separates from Shiva. These two inseparable forces temporarily separate. And it's said that Shiva, the divine masculine energy of awareness, takes seat in the area of the crown above the head, and Shakti takes seat in the root in the form of kundalini. And in the mythological story about human life, as Shiva and Shakti are separated in the human body, she at the base of the spine, at the root of the spine, he at the crown, she experiences a profound longing to be reunited with her beloved. So in the mythological tradition, the awakening of kundalini comes about when the goddess, in her resting form, in her sleeping form, begins to make the journey through the human body to become one once again with her husband, with her divine lover in the crown. So, once again, let's allow ourselves to be present with the breath. inhaling with the feeling that our attention rises to the crown. And have the sense that whether you're aware of it at this moment or not, within the crown of your head, it's the very subtle transcendent awareness, which in the tradition we call Shiva, or pure consciousness. So as the inhaled breath rises to the crown, just see if you could become aware of this subtle field of awareness that is always present there as that knowing presence, that awareing, which holds our experience, which is the witness of our experience. And then with the exhalation, feel the breath flowing down the body, down through the center of the body, down into the base of the body and below the base. And as you let the breath flow up with the inhalation, down with the exhalation, see if you can begin to imagine the presence of these two realms. I like to think of them as circles or even balls of energy, one very subtle at the crown, opening up into a kind of infinite realm of mysterious presence above us, and the other at the base, which actually holds us like a kind of a subtle balance ball of energy supporting us from beneath. So with each exhalation, see if you can become more and more present to that energy which supports you from below. And with the inhalation, see if you can become more and more present to the energy above the head, the energy of Shiva. The inhaled breath flowing up to the region above the crown. The exhaled breath flowing down below the body, below the perineum, to this subtle ball of energy, this subtle presence supporting you from below, from beneath. And now you can perhaps begin to become aware of the channel, the Sushumna Nadi, the incredibly important central channel which connects the region below the body, the region of the root chakra, the place where Kundalini rests, to the region above the crown, the place that is the ancient home in the body of the Shiva energy. The central channel, like a very slender thread of light, flows through the center of the body just in front of the spinal column, connecting the region below the body with the region above the body, and of course threading itself through the major spiritual centers, the chakras, that run along the central channel. And to find this central channel, you can just let your body circle, a very small circle, as though it were circling around an axis that supports your body from inside. And as you make these very gentle circles, very tiny circles, it might become much more palpable to recognize the presence of this central channel. And again, the inhalation flows up through the center of the body, through the central channel. Up to the crown, and the exhalation flows down the central channel to this region at the base of the body. It's said that inside the central channel are stored all the past impressions and karmic patterns that are buried within us. The subtle form of implicit memory. And that as Kundalini awakens and begins to move through the central channel, part of the work she does is to clear out these stored karmas. So as you have this sense of the central channel and these two centers, one at the base, one below the base, and the other above the crown, become aware that in this region below the body, in the Muladhara Chakra, Muladhara means root support, in this region, about 8 finger widths below your perineum, imagine a yellow square, which is about as wide as your hips on each side. And in the center of the square are 4 petals, like the petals of a flower. They're deep red in color. And it's not necessary really to visualize them. The visualization at this stage is simply there to allow your attention to begin to get a sense of how much power and how much presence is concentrated in this center below the body. It's said that the petals of the Muladhara Chakra are made of subtle blissfulness. There are 4 forms of bliss. The petals of the Muladhara Chakra have the quality of 4 forms of bliss. And their names are eternal bliss, the bliss of yoga, the bliss of the world, and the bliss of the hero, of the one who has conquered his or her senses. And to recognize that the region of the Muladhara Chakra is a region of bliss is to begin to understand the incredible reverence with which this center is held. It's not just a survival center. It's actually the center of embodied blissfulness. And in the Muladhara Chakra, as we begin to attend to it and to open it, we begin to subtly recognize what an extraordinary privilege it is to be embodied, to be in a human body, to be supported by this exquisite blissfulness. In the tradition, it's said that our sexuality actually resides in the Muladhara Chakra, and that our human sexuality, physical sexuality, is the, so to speak, condensed form of that subtle blissfulness which the subtle Muladhara Chakra holds. And that resting in the Muladhara Chakra, The Kundalini resides inside a triangle, which is in the very center of the circle made by the four petals of the lotus inside the yellow square. The triangle in the center of the circle is lightning-like in color. It points upwards. And within the triangle is the lingam. It's called a bana lingam. It's a form of Shiva in that the pillar-shaped form that's perhaps the most primordial representation of the divine masculine in the human world. Kundalini Shakti, as we've said, is coiled 3.5 times around the lingam. And as we imagine her with her like a coiled serpent made of light. Her mouth rests just under the upward pointing tip of the triangle. And emerging from the tip of the triangle is the Sushumna Nadi, the central channel, which rises up from that triangular base, up through the perineum, up through the subtle body, as we have said, rising up through the region of the lower belly, up through the lower abdomen, the upper abdomen, through the solar plexus, through the center of the chest, through the throat, up through the center of the head, through the crown. And with the next exhalation, let your awareness come right down to the center, right down to the subtle square of yellow light, with the four petals, deep red petals of the lotus, the triangle within the center, Kundalini coiled around the lingam. The next inhalation, allow the breath to flow all the way up the Sushumna Nadi, up to the center above the crown. And I'm going to give you a very important instruction. Imagine with the exhalation, the enlivening, awakening energy of Shiva above the crown flows down through the center of your body, through the central channel, meets the coiled Kundalini inside the Muladhara Chakra, and begins to draw her upwards into the region in the lower belly called the second chakra or the Swadhisthana chakra. And with the inhalation, let your awareness flow upward to the region above the crown and feel as though the energy of pure awareness, the energy of Shiva, the grace-bestowing energy of Shiva, the divine masculine awakening energy flows down your body with the exhalation, drawing up the snake-like Kundalini, touching her, and then with the next inhalation, drawing her upward to the heart, allowing your attention now to rest in the heart. To breathe in and out in the heart. And with the next inhalation, feel that your energy rises upward, drawn by the Shiva energy above your crown. And with the exhalation, imagine that a golden waterfall of light pours down, meets Kundalini energy in the heart, and draws her upward through the neck, through the head, up to the region above the head. And inhaling and exhaling, you allow your attention to flow for a moment there in the crown of the head. Just allowing yourself become present to that moment when we have imagined the union of Shiva and Shakti in the crown. Just notice what the experience is of meditating in the center in the crown. Inhale, and then with the next exhalation, feel that the light and energy in the crown flows down through your head, bathing your brain, flows through your chest, down your arms, fills your entire body. And with the next inhalation, sense the energy rising from the muladhara up through the center of the body, through the central channel to the heart, taking rest for a moment or two in the heart as you inhale and exhale. Feel the inhalation rising again to the crown, the exhalation pouring energy down from the crown into the heart, and then drawing the kundalini energy in the heart up through the throat, through the head, to unite with Shiva in the crown. And feeling that energy in the Sahasrara, the energy of union, as you inhale and exhale for a moment or two. And inhale and feel with the exhalation that the energy of the Sahasrara, the energy of the union of Shiva and Shakti, flows down through your body, irradiating your body. And with your next inhalation, allow the energy, allow the breath to bring your awareness into the heart. The heart being the central point where the energy of earth and the energy of heaven meet. Practice that we've just done, of course, is a replication of what in many of the traditions they say is what really happens in Kundalini awakening. As we said earlier, and as we're going to discuss in great detail next week, there are different ways in which Kundalini can be awakened. The one that many of us know, because many of us are students of Hatha Yoga, is the practice of pranayama and bandhas that we do in the Hatha Yoga tradition, in which we deliberately, through effort, try to coax Kundalini awake in the muladhara. Another way that Kundalini is awakened is through mantra. Mantra is a very powerful practice for awakening Kundalini because, as we said earlier, mantra is the sound form of Kundalini. And normally mantra is given by the teacher, and when the mantra is given, it contains a deposit of awakening energy, and it's actually the awakening energy in the mantra that begins to bring Kundalini awake in the body. Another way in which Kundalini awakens is through devotional practices like chanting. And another way is by direct transmission from a teacher or from Shakti herself. And this practice that we just did, in which we actually imagine the energy of the upper chakras flowing down and touching Kundalini at the base and then drawing it gently up to the crown. This is a practice for beginning to call on and activate the awakening energy of the higher realms. My guru and many other teachers of the tradition would often say that when Kundalini awakens, even though all these methods are effective, that really the best method, the best way of awakening Kundalini is to actually invoke and activate and ask for the grace of the higher realms and allow that grace to descend through the crown, down through the body, and actually draw Kundalini Shakti upward. And one of the reasons why this is said to be, let's say, the best method is because when that energy comes from the higher regions, from the subtler regions, it carries with it a light and an awareness that can actually help Kundalini activate and move through the karmas that are often experienced in the lower centers, so that Kundalini can both bring forth these buried karmas, but not in a way that gets you stuck in them, in a way that actually allows the karmas to release. And this is because that energy of the higher chakras contains within it the powerful intention of love and awareness that comes from the transcendent union of Shiva and Shakti in the subtler realms. So we will be practicing with this particular methodology during this class, actually drawing energy in from above the crown and allowing it to activate the energy at the root, and eventually allowing us to bring together our sense of earth and heaven inside our bodies, inside the heart. I want to tell you a little bit about my own process, partly because I think it's a good example of the way in which a spontaneous Kundalini awakening can lead us on the journey, as I believe has been true for many of you here in this class. Many of us here had experienced an awakening that may not have anything to do with our practice, but may have just seemed to occur spontaneously. Some of you have perhaps heard this story. It's kind of a typical early 70s story, and what I'm going to do is mention several levels of awakening that occurred over a period of time, and which revealed to me, as I think has been revealed to you, that the awakening of Kundalini is not a one-time thing. It's actually a progressive process that matures in the course of time. So when I first experienced awakening, I was in my 20s. I was a 100% worldly person. I was a journalist. I lived in downtown Manhattan. I considered myself a hipster. I was quite unhappy. And I had just entered into a new relationship. I had a new boyfriend, and I had a lot of hope for this relationship, as one does in the early stages of a relationship. And we had taken a psychedelic drug together. It was not the first time I'd ever taken a psychedelic drug, but it was one of the first times. And we were sitting in my living room listening to a Grateful Dead record. And all of a sudden, feeling as though it came through the sounds, this experience of a flooding of love just overwhelmed me. And with that love came the recognition, the instantaneous recognition, everything is love. I am love. The universe loves me. Love is the truth. It's not suffering that is the truth. It is love that is the truth. And I began to weep. literally my entire body was inundated, flooded with ecstasy. I turned to my boyfriend. I said, oh my God, there's nothing but love. My boyfriend said, haven't you ever taken acid before? So I tell this story and it often makes me laugh when I think of it, but I should say that I absolutely knew that it wasn't the drug, that it was the truth. And in the days to come, of course, the experience dissolved it lasted about 24 hours, actually long after the drug had worn off. But it brought with it, even after it left, it brought with it a very clear recognition that everything that I had considered important in my life was unimportant compared to this experience that had come to me, and that what I needed to do in life was find a way to make that experience permanent. So, of course, that's easier said than done. And I really had no idea what to do. This was the 70s. It was very hard even to find a yoga studio to practice in, much less information about this kind of awakening. But I began to meditate. I began to do yoga. Eventually within about a year, I had found a group, a sangham that I was working with, and begun to do quite intense spiritual practice. Now this experience, which was a fairly mild awakening in one sense, it didn't have any physical manifestations. It wasn't one of those dramatic energy going up the spine. All it did, and all is a sort of a hilarious word, what it did was open my heart and change my understanding about what life is about. And this awakening I have subsequently come to understand was an example of the kind of awakening that in Sanskrit is called the awakening of Chit Kundalini. The awakening that actually opens us up to the recognition of the deeper meaning of life. And the kind of awakening that I experienced, which I think many of you have experienced, is actually the source of the transformations that send us onto the spiritual path. So, unlike the ordinary sense of what Kundalini is, my initial experience brought me closer and closer to the recognition of my life's priorities. And a couple of years later, I found myself with a spiritual teacher who actually initiated me into an experience which I'm going to tell you about. I'm hearing that the line here is cutting out. And so what I would like to do is hang up and call back in and see if the line, if the reception begins to improve. So I'm just going to ask you to sit with the breath for just a moment and I will come back. I think that what would be a good thing to do right now, I'll save the rest of my awakening story until next week. I think it would be really great right now to just take a few minutes for questions and answers. I'm going to take that message from Deb as a sign that it was time to for me to stop talking and for you guys to bring up any questions that you might have. So if you have a question.
I do.
Hi, who's this?
This is Dawn from Morro Bay.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi, Sally.
Nice to hear your voice, and I do apologize for that little moment of confusion, one of the downsides of teleconferences that sometimes that happens. So, Dawn, shoot, Let us hear your question.
So I'm kind of a newbie to the concept of the four bodies.
Uh-huh.
I took notes, and I really understand the subtle body from experiences I've had, and it resonates with me.
Mm-hmm.
But the causal body, I was wondering if you could talk just a little bit more about the causal body and the super causal body and their differences.
Of course. Great question. The causal body is hard to understand because for most of us it's unknown. You know, the way we experience the causal body, and we often have to take the word of the sages for it until we begin to have a direct experience of it. But we go into the causal body every night during deep sleep. And it is that state where there's no awareness of experience. So it's literally it's a body of darkness. In the tradition, it's said that the causal body is actually the home of the veil of Maya. That is, it's the home of the unconsciousness that keeps us from recognizing ourselves as light. And in the causal body, the experience of being in the causal body in meditation, and you may have had this experience, is that you're in meditation and you go into this very, very deep state. It's like everything becomes black. There is no experience. You feel like you've gone out, that you've gone into an unconscious state. But when you come out of that state, you experience a deep sense of refreshment and, you know, of restfulness. And it's an extremely profound state, the state of the causal body, which is often, as I said, confused with unconsciousness. So if you have deep meditation and you find yourself going into a state of unknowing, in fact, in one of the great Christian mystical texts, the cloud of unknowing, the teacher of that text, the anonymous teacher of that text says, God is veiled by a cloud of unknowing. And when we enter into that darkness, we are actually entering into the doorway to God consciousness. So this experience is very deeply known. St. John of the Cross called it the dark night of the soul. We often think of the dark night as an experience of difficulty, you know, as a hard time, as a depression. In fact, the dark night of the soul is the entrance into the darkness of the causal body. It's not an unpleasant experience. It's an experience of the literal unknowingness. That is both the direct experience of the veil of Maya and also the experience of the doorway into the super causal body. So the causal body is considered to hold the collective unconscious, which means that it's an incredibly significant and important aspect of human life. On the other side of the causal body, we literally, and again, many of you have had this experience in meditation, there is this moment when it's as though, you know, it's like being in a plane and lifting above the clouds. You know, you come out of a thick fog in a jet, and especially if you're in a small private jet, they seem to do this to just... I was once in a private jet. We took off from Los Angeles where there was a very thick coat of smog, and we flew up. Within a couple of minutes, we had come above the clouds and we were in this realm of light. And that is what the supercausal body is. It's an experience of ourselves as pure light, pure awareness, pure presence. My first experience of that in meditation happened as I was sitting. I found myself literally lifted above my thinking mind. The mind was still thinking, but me, myself, my sense of self, was poised in this realm of pure awareness that was filled with blissfulness, filled with peace, and was also completely aware of my body, of the thoughts, of my surroundings, but from a place of detachment is the wrong word. It's although it was detached. It was a recognition that who and what I am is the pure consciousness and deep contentment. That, you know, that literally supersedes every other experience and can be present to that, to our experience, without being entangled in it, without suffering it. So I hope that's enough of an explanation for now, Dawn.
Yes.
The supercausal body is actually it's the name that the yogic texts of India give for that state that in other traditions is called the enlightened state or the awake state. So thank you for that question.
Thank you.
Anyone else? You can press *7 to unmute yourself. And when you're done, okay, Lolly, did you have a question? Press *7. Okay. Anyone else?
Hi, Sally.
Hi, who's this?
This is Aaron from
New Jersey. Hi, Aaron.
Jersey.
Hello. Nice to hear your voice.
I was experiencing something interesting during the section of meditation where we were using the root chakra.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And channeling the Shakti upward
right.
of my body spontaneously like grasping like my knees and like opening up my chest sort of to create space because I tend to carry a lot of tension in my shoulders, so I guess wanted to hear your thoughts about sort of spontaneous movement and sort of that sort of thing during meditation.
Well, that is actually a very significant Kundalini experience. It's one of the ways in which Kundalini works in the physical body. And we'll talk about this in detail next week. But what very often happens in a meditation like the one you just experienced is the activation of what's called in Kashmir Shaivism the Prana Kundalini. That is Kundalini in the form of the prana, the life force energy, which then begins to move your body spontaneously. They're called yogic kriyas. The word kriya means action. And it sounds like what you were doing was kind of a mulabandha, I'm forgetting the name of that yoga posture. It's one of the disadvantages of age, is that Sanskrit names begin to elude me. It's the, you know, the process of you actually, can you explain to me again, your hands grasp your knees?
Yeah, well, I was sitting cross-legged.
Right.
And I was pulling my shoulder blades back and down.
Yes.
By actually pulling on my knees while I was inhaling. And that expanded my chest further.
Yes. In other words, your body spontaneously put you into a posture that allowed you to become very stable and allowed the chest to expand, allowed the heart to come online in a deeper way. This is a posture that opens the heart center. It's actually a very beautiful experience that I often have when the meditation energy is strong, that your body spontaneously takes on a more energetic sitting posture. That we try to put ourselves into the best posture in the normal course of things, but actually the energy of the body, the Kundalini energy, knows exactly what posture is going to best facilitate the practice that we're doing. And when she's very active, she will do that for us. So that experience of the spontaneous posture emerging, or some of you may have had the experience, which I often have, of the entire body bending forward from the hips, with the forehead on the floor, which is a posture that actually activates the sixth chakra, or the body bending backward, which it sounds to me like this is what was beginning to happen there, which actually activates the heart center. So these physical experiences, which, as I say, I will speak more about in more detail next week, are a classic Kundalini Kriya. And you can trust them. My teacher used to say that, you know, doing yoga asana according to a formula or according to an externally given instruction is good, but that when the body itself moves into a yoga asana, then you can trust that this is the asana that your body and your subtle body need to experience at this moment. So thank you for sharing that with us. That's great.
Thank you.
We'll take one more question.
Sally,
and the question
is Gail.
Hi, Gail.
Asheville. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about grounding. I felt during the meditation, my feet, it was like more than just the tingling that I sometimes feel. It was like they became energetically larger, so to speak.
Were you sitting on a chair or on the floor?
Oh, yeah. For today, I was sitting in a chair.
Okay, so I think you kind of answered your own question. That so when we are meditating with an attention to the ground energy, to the Muladhara chakra energy, which is actually our personal connection to Earth, you know, and Earth, as you know, is not just the physical Earth. Earth is also a subtle energy. It's, you know, when we talk about Earth as a goddess or Earth as Gaia, we're not only talking about the physical planetary Earth, we're also talking about her subtle body. You know, just as we have a subtle body, the Earth has a subtle body. So that grounding practice, that practice of presencing the Muladhara chakra, especially the way we were doing it, with attention to the area below the perineum, below the body, actually does activate the grounding energy in your system. So to feel your feet tingling and becoming larger, which is quite a beautiful experience, is actually a sign that the energy in your body is connecting you to the ground. You know, and very often when we're doing the kind of practice where the, you know, we're meditating on the rising energy or the energy in the upper chakras, I have found that it's very important to simultaneously activate the Muladhara chakra, the root energy, the earth energy, whether it's through the feet or through the energy below the pelvis. So it sounds to me as though that you were having a spontaneous activation of the ground energy.
Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you for asking the question. So we are coming to the end of our allotted time, and I just want to thank you all for being so present and so connected in this process that we've been doing together. You're going to get a homework assignment. It'll be sent to you in the listserv, and it'll also be on the home area of the website. And it's going to be a meditation on this practice that we were doing, practicing with the feeling the energy rising to the crown and then flowing down to the base and then rising to the heart, so that we can begin to be aware of the process of connecting heaven and earth through the Sushumna Nadi. And I'm going to give you now, in the few moments that we have, a mantra which some of you have practiced with me before. It's a mantra that's very much connected with the goddess. And I'm going to suggest that you practice with it, connecting it to the inhalation and the exhalation. And the mantra is Om Aim Rim Shrim, and you'll receive it, as a, as a handout, as part of the homework. Om is the primordial sound at the heart of the cosmos. It's a sound that reverberates in the cosmos. Some say that it's actually the sound of the Big Bang. In the Vedic traditions, it's said that it's the primordial vibration that brings worlds into manifestation, and that we can actually follow back to the source of the world. Aim is a mantra that's connected with creative inspiration, with the goddess Saraswati, who is the goddess of speech, music, and also of beginnings. She's a goddess whom you invoke for all kinds of creative inspiration. Hrim is the mantra of Shakti coming into manifestation. It's the mantra that's connected with the Divine Mother as the giver of both embodiment and protection and realization. And Shrim is the mantra of auspiciousness, of goodness. It signifies the fundamental, glorious, divine beauty at the heart of the world. So when we practice with this mantra, Om Aim Hrim Shrim, we actually bring online the inspiration of goddess, the creative manifesting power of goddess, and the extraordinary beauty and goodness of goddess, all of which are the essence of Kundalini as she moves through the body and makes us more and more aware of our essential divinity, of our embodied divine humanity. So in these last few minutes, let's practice with Om Aim Hrim Shrim in the heart, and you can allow the inhalation to bring your awareness into the heart with the thought, Om Aim Hrim Shrim. And then with the exhalation, just allow your attention to flow through the heart, to flow up through the crown down towards the base, just to flow in an expansive direction. So the inhalation brings in the thought, Om Aim Hrim Shrim, to the heart. The exhalation expands the heart energy. And you can say the mantra with the exhalation if you like, or simply allow the energy of the heart, the energy that has begun to be activated through these mantras and through the invocations of Kundalini, just to allow this energy to flow expansively through the heart. Inhaling with Om Aim Hrim Shrim in the heart. Exhaling, allowing the energy of the heart to expand in whatever way feels natural, with no sense of forcing or expecting. Allowing it to expand backwards to each side, frontwards, upwards, down, however it wants to. Om Aim Hrim Shrim. Flowing in and just opening to the intention of Shakti to expand your awareness, to literally open you in subtle ways from inside, from the heart. Om Aim Hrim Shrim, we ask that our practice be of benefit to all beings and to the earth. We ask that Kundalini Shakti open us to our own freedom, to our own love, to the power of healing at the heart of the cosmos. that our own lives and the lives of everyone whose life we touch be irradiated with her subtle, mysterious power of love and freedom. Om Aim Vim Shrim. May the beauty at the heart of reality manifest through your life. Thank you so much. Love and blessings. Please do feel free to join the listserv, share your experience, ask any question you may have. And for just a moment, let's become aware of all of us here together, here alive, and in the subtle field of the Sangam that exists during the entire time this course is being held and given for all of us, whether we're present on the live call or listening later on. May the love of Kundalini Shakti continue to irradiate us. Namaste. Good night. Thank you.